I wanted to be all kinds of things in life. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a theatre artist. I wanted to be very many different things. Think about it, like you're walking in Bombay and stopping people being like, talk to me, they'll just think you're crazy. The one thing I've done for 9 years consistently is show up. And the story needs to be told. That's the truth. There's no way to bring out this impact if you can't write it.
Karishma Mehta has built one of the most interesting communities telling real people's stories in India. And she's figuring a way to use that community to not just empower and inspire, but to truly be able to give back. We tap into all of that, her journey, and so much more on today's episode. But before you go there, I want to make sure you hit subscribe and smash that bell icon. Go straight into my chat with Karishma. Normally try to start off with what should really be a broad-based question, but maybe I'll start off by first saying, if you had to kind of put down in a sentence and say, what has captivated you the most about human beings when you were a child, what would you say?
When I was a child?
When you were a child.
So I grew up with two sisters. I have two older siblings and my parents. And if you grew up with multiple siblings, you'll know is that there are certain things you just have to do, right? Like you have to share, you have to kind of be cognizant of your siblings. Mm. So nothing like that happened with us. We were three sisters and all in different age groups. So a lot of sharing of clothes, things like that. I remember that every time I went out, I felt a little bit more comfortable because of the kind of environment we had at home. So I think I was always conducive to being very open and having a lot of conversations. But what captivated me, I just liked being around people. Because when you have three girls at home, everybody's friends become everybody's friends. And I also had very many cousins at home, so as in who would visit us at home. So I just liked being around people, and I liked having fun, you know, with when there were people around. So I guess that.
I asked you that specifically because, you know, oftentimes when you're an individual who likes to tell stories of people, like to kind of tap into that, you innately are curious about what makes human beings tick. And I remember following, I think from the early days, right? And I would always say there was always a knack of saying, well, there's a curiosity towards the human existence, which comes across on all the content that comes across from your company. And I'm like, has to kind of start from the top, has to start from innate curiosity from the top saying, okay, I genuinely want to understand what people's stories are like, what they're getting from it.
So I think curiosity is one thing, but also I love writing. I have always loved writing. And I have somehow gone through years of my life never even considering it as an option for a career. And I looking back, I'm just like, why? Like I've wanted to be all kinds of things in life. I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a theatre artist. I wanted to be very many different things. But as much as you speak about the curiosity of humanity, I think what was important in my journey, and it came very naturally to me, was wanting to write in a particular way and wanting to tell stories in a way that wasn't typically considered, you know, like a journalist would write this piece, but it was more from the heart. It played on emotions. I liked a little bit of poetry in the way our stories were told. So I think it stems more from that. I was curious, yes, but it will definitely be trumped by my love for the written word.
And somewhere along that writing process, I want to actually know, and I'm sure I've been asked this too many times, but I cannot not ask you, saying, how did it all start? How did What was that first piece?
Because it's the most boring story, because this is the one thing I talk about in every TED talk that I give. And I'm
how
just,
it started.
How it started. And I'm just like...
But I'm like, I cannot not ask that question.
How can you have iterations of that story? You know, yeah. Like, you know, you try to make it more interesting. Yeah. I just gave a talk and I was like, how do I make this? And I was like, I can't. It's what happened.
Yeah.
But I'll summarize quickly. Yeah. So I stumbled upon Humans of New York in college. I was in third year college. I remember seeing the photographs and just reading, I don't remember which is the first story I read, but I read 4 hours worth of content in college. And I could not read other things, right? Like, I mean, I'm a reader, but like my textbooks and things, like it's difficult, right, in college. And I remember feeling something, like I felt like, oh my God, how, like I felt like I was there, you know, like I was having this chat with this person. So off a impulse, I typed Humans of Bombay on Facebook in the search tab and nothing came up. So the page was available.
Yeah.
And I just blocked it. And I had no intention of doing anything with it ever. I just blocked it. And I came back home. I was 21. And I came back from college having no idea what's next. And everybody else was extending their vacation. It's a vacation if you're in the UK. It's like one more year of masters, one more MBA, you know, like don't want to come back home. My other friends were getting jobs. And I just decided I want to come back home and just figure out, right? Like, what is it that I want to do? I'm an industrial economics major. So they were very like, I could like work at a bank or, you know, something along those lines. And it bored the shit out of me. So I was just, no offense to anybody who's in any of these professions. I have a huge respect for you guys. But just
for me.
I
totally relate.
Yeah. So I took a sabbatical. And that was very, I'd love to poetically describe it as path breaking, but it was a mess to deal with because I come from like a family where education, there's a lot of importance placed on it since day one. You have to be well educated, you have to get a job, you have to be independent. These virtues are great, but I was coming back with an industrial economics degree and being like, I don't want to work immediately, or I just want to, it was to chill, but it was not chilling. I was kind of figuring out.
To chill is oftentimes the toughest thing to do if you're not a person who, were you a chill person? In
no, general? I'm a very wired human being.
Exactly.
Like I always need to know what I'm doing or where I have to go or what it is next. But I was just like, I need to take this step back. And in hindsight, that's the best decision I made, because I think that had I gotten X job, I would have probably stuck with it. But I read a lot. I still read a lot. I've always read a lot. I wrote for myself. I decided that I want to start a magazine. I don't know if you've read Thought Catalog ever.
No, I haven't.
It's this digital magazine and they have contributors from across the world. And their writing is poetry. And I love that. I fell in love with their style, the beat of what they stood for. And I said, okay, I'm going to start an e-magazine. And Humans of Bombay will be a column in that magazine, like one tiny thing. But it's the first thing I worked on. And I went out to shoot on Marine Drive. And literally my brief to people, like, think about it. Like, you're walking in Bombay and stopping people being like, talk to me. They'll just think you're crazy. They're just like, dude, I don't have time for this shit.
Everybody has, like, things to do, places to be.
Yeah, like, no. But I was like, I was 21, so I was actually not very incorrect when I was telling people it's like a college project, like help me out, talk to me, you know. And then like the 9th or 10th woman spoke to me, and she spoke to me for an hour on Marine Drive about how she'd recently been widowed and she had to go back to working. And I wrote about this recently, where at the end of that conversation she said, I feel lighter, it's been tough. And I don't know what it was about that feeling, but I wanted to chase it. I wanted to chase making somebody feel heard. And that's how it began. And I started speaking to a few more people. And on 28th of Jan, 2014, I just started a Facebook page called Humans of Bombay.
What you just said about the fact that people just want to be heard.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things we often don't realize about the world around us, is that we assume everybody wants to engage.
Yeah.
Where, oh, someone's put up something, someone's dropped your message, said something to you. You think they're expecting a response.
Yeah.
But all they want is the fact that, are you even listening
are
to them?
Listening to me?
And that's been like one of the biggest realizations for me over the last few years, is people just want to tell or talk about what they're going through, what they've been through, or worries about where they're kind of going. And I feel when you said that, when someone felt lighter because they just felt heard, I feel that was actually the true essence of what we all set out to do in social media. Yeah. It's just kind of put out there. And at some point, obviously, things have become many other...
It's lopsided.
Yeah, it's not become like I'm saying something which I think you want to hear oftentimes, yeah, versus what it started off as. And I feel still, I believe there is still a large chunk of people who genuinely do want to kind of say out loud what they really want to say.
Yeah.
As you've kind of progressed and told so many more stories, how has this emotion of just letting people tell their story, how has that changed at all? Has that evolved?
No, it's still the same. I don't conduct very many interviews now. We have a fantastic team of writers who all are very good listeners, actually. And they'll ask you the right questions, but the right questions lead you to what you eventually would have said, but like in a way that's a conversation. We're never interviewing people, we're just conversing with them. I just feel like if that's the value system, it's very difficult to not tell the story correctly. And I guess that's why we do what we do. Yeah.
What makes a good listener?
I mean, I could reverse this conversation and start asking you questions and then you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But I think what makes a good listener is just a little bit of like space and time to even be like, okay, there are silences, but it's all good. You know, like you don't have to, you can take your time with this, or simple things like that must have been tough, or I understand. Or, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with this part of your life, you can talk about it, but we won't necessarily write about it. That paints you a very different picture of the person that you're interviewing. Because if they feel safe with you, people open up to the depths of vulnerability. And I've been privy to many such conversations where I reversed the table and I was like, I don't know if I'd ever be able to say that. And that's the truth.
No, I also asked you this because it's something which a large part of the world lacks, right? Is that we all want to say things, but don't necessarily want to listen to what someone else has to say. And what you just said, you're just kind of you're reaffirming the fact to the other person, saying, I'm actually listening to you. I'm not moving on to the next thing. Like I've often been accused of being a bad listener in my personal life. And then I'm like, no, but I'm a podcaster in what I do. And they're like, you might be listening there.
Mm-hmm.
You're not listening at home. And I've often thought about that. And so I'm on this journey to understand how to even rewire my own way of listening to make it more conducive. And who better to ask than you? Because that's literally what you've been able to kind of champion, put across. We often assume poetry is prose and it's flowery and... But it's also a way in which a story can flow, can feel like poetry.
Like a combination of words put together in the right way, in the right sequence, can make you feel things that you didn't know you could feel. And that's the thing about words. And I fell in love with the written word for as long as I could remember. I wanted to be an author for that reason, that you can feel something so profound with a combination of words. I think the essence of that does translate in our stories very often.
And I've been kind of circling around all of these, right? Because I've also want to kind of flip this around at some point and actually ask you, saying, from the time you started in 2014 to now, how have you, how do you believe you've changed as a human being? You're part of the Humans of Bombay, so in essence as well as in building out the organization, how have you seen yourself evolve?
We grew together. I was 21 when I started Humans of Bombay. So the formative period in one's adult life where, you know, you're figuring out who you are, working jobs, you know, kind of understanding yourself, all happens simultaneously with the company. And it's just been like, it's impossible to encapsulate these years. But like, I said this recently, that the one thing I've done for 9 years consistently is show up. And that's in my 20s, when, you know, like, you do like moving around and you do like building experience, which is not a bad thing. It's everybody's decision. But this is the only job I've ever had. I've never worked anywhere else a day in my life. I've never done anything else. It is my identity. I'm very often called that Humans of Bombay girl. And it's true. It's so deeply ingrained in who I am and what I do and how I operate that it's very difficult to even separate the two. Now, that can be a huge advantage, but it can also be a huge disadvantage, because sometimes when I say things as me, not as the founder of my company, yeah, it's not okay. And I think I've learned a lot about myself, about how to maneuver emotions, about how to maneuver a business, about how to say things a little bit more correctly, even though I usually don't have a filter, but you learn.
And it's interesting that, because when you start off as being a founder, this is the first thing that you do, right? Like I said, this was the first job, this was really it. You also, at some point, it's tougher to, like you said, separate you from the business.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things which happens over time. And so if you had to turn back to yourself at 21 and say, these are a few things which I'd kind of tell you, maybe as advice, maybe as pointers, what would those be?
Yeah. Exercise restraint. I feel like it's one quality that I've been honing, just restraint. Like, you don't have to react. You don't have to. I mean, having a platform like Humans of Bombay comes with a huge amount of public, just the eye, right? Like, you are scrutinized for certain things. And in the past, when things were written negatively, I would react. And it was so stupid. Like, I was like, why are you reacting? You know, like, don't react to that. Just let it be. And disconnect a little bit emotionally. I think that I've now consciously made an effort to not take things so personally on when it comes to the business. It was tough, but there's no other way to be. You can't be crazy, like, take it personally if somebody says something. It's just what it is, you know? And I would just say that, like, keep going or keep at it, because the first 2 or 3 years were actually not the easiest, because it had never been done before. And to my parents, it was like, you're going out on the street and talking to people. That's what you do. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do.
You know, what you said about reacting to people, and I've battled with this. And when you're saying this, I was smiling internally, because the tendency is that you want to either correct what someone's saying, this is not what it is, and you're getting this wrong, or to kind of sometimes lash out. And at some point in time, I think maybe the last like 4 or 5 years or so, I read something in Stoicism which really resonated, say that the best way to kind of get back is to not be like that. It's just kind of let it be. Sometimes you don't have to engage in every argument. You don't have to be like that. And just by showing the essence of what you're creating, you're kind of proving anything thrown at you wrong. Or you don't actually have to prove it wrong.
But I want to add to this, that all these things that you're saying or what I said, they sound great when you're saying it. But the one thing that has helped me practice it and embody it is meditation. I'm a deeply spiritual person. I wish somebody had introduced me to spirituality at 21. I wish. But I just feel like it is such an important message to give. I don't know what your audience base is, but if it is the youth predominantly, just take my word for it. Meditate, align, find spirituality. So a lot of people associate spirituality with
religion
yeah. or like religious scripts, or I have to go sit in a temple. That is absolutely not the case. You can find spirituality at home. I have found it at home. I meditate every day, and it has changed my life. So all of these things that I'm able to now incorporate in my life to be a better human, to be a better founder, is because I'm able to go inwards. And that journey inwards is the only way to go right now, especially right now. There's so much happening, and there's so much to deal with, to compare with, to seek validation from. The only way to go is inwards. So I think that that's something that I definitely think is important.
How did that journey start for you? How did the journey of looking inwards start? There must have been an inception point.
My sister was a huge believer of The Secret, and she introduced me to it. And the thing about me is that when something clicks, I have to go deep. I can't go wide. So I had to figure out what is the essence of it from a non-fluff perspective. The Secret is something that is a commercially viable book, right? Like anybody will understand, and that's what its purpose is. But there are deep principles and there's deep knowledge about where that stems from. So I just started reading. I'm a reader. Joseph Murphy, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, changed my life. And after that, I followed Abraham Hicks, Neville Goddard. There's even Autobiography of a Yogi. There's Joe Dispenza. There are a couple of people whose books I've read. I've also, I do follow ISKCON. I believe in a lot of those principles. I feel like it started because of wanting to know what is going on. But yes, as my life progressed and different things happened, and I couldn't understand the why of it. Like, why is this happening to me? Or like, what did I do? I realized that you can talk to your friends, you can talk to as many people, they'll all have different variations, but you actually do know the answer if you ask. And I wanted to know how to ask myself. And yeah, that's the reason.
It's a tough one, right? To because we don't ask ourselves things often enough. Because you also worry about the fact that the assumption is if you ask somebody else, because they might know the answer.
Yeah.
You assume you don't know, so you don't necessarily ask yourself the question, which actually the only person who can answer it is yourself.
And it's only right for you. What's right for somebody else may not be right for you. The only person who knows exactly what's right for you is you. And I think understanding that one sentence can take a lifetime for people. But the sooner you realize it, your life changes in ways that you can't even imagine.
But you also have to start by peeling off certain layers, right?
Yeah.
Because you can also fool yourself very easily. Let's be honest. We fool ourselves into believing things far more easily than anybody can fool us. It's
kind of,
no, but you know, it's that line. I remember reading about this fact that there's a line between ego and confidence and overconfidence. And the fact is that you can either swing imposter syndrome and confidence, rather, saying that you either say I'm an imposter, or you kind of go towards saying, oh, I'm so confident of this, even though I don't know anything about it. You kind of find that middle ground. And that only comes by a peeling off those layers of all the jhoot you tell yourself, and then eventually moving towards the reality of things.
Everybody's going through something, right? Like, the word suffering has been glorified, but everybody's going through something. It's impossible to have it as a flat line. It means you're dead, It has to be up and down. How do you deal with the down, with the low, is when you kind of come back to this conversation of that fine line, right? Like, are you going into a state of being the victim or being blaming other people? The only truth is that everything happening around you and to you is a manifestation of something you hold. And that's so difficult to swallow, because I didn't attract the heartbreak. I didn't attract the business failing. I didn't attract losing my job. I didn't attract the health condition. It's a combination of many things, but fundamentally in the universe, it's you. And all these elements are playing around you and for you and with you. And the sooner that you realize that and embody that, you're able to maneuver things in a way that you feel in control. Ultimately, you want to feel in control of your own life. There are so many people who go through life with things just being done to them, with things happening around them. It's just like, okay, yeah, it's free flowing. You don't have to be like that. You can be in control and you can control these things. And yeah, I think.
If you had to pick, especially in the last few years, and because you use the word control, and I feel we've never felt more out of control than we have over the last.
Yeah, like you're just out of whack.
Last 2-3 years have been the most like, what is the control even? And you also had a lot of conversations with people who generally embody everything from the kind of confidence you want to pursue, or look at just generally as people what you want to look at. If you had to pick a few things you've learned from them that have kind of brought this being centered a lot, made it a lot stronger, what would those things be?
Two stories. One is of this individual called Ali Bhatt. We call him Ali Bhai. He was wrongfully detained for a crime he did not commit for 23 years of his life. And he was orphaned in jail. He lost the love of his life in jail. He lost his youth. He lost his adult, like early adulthood. He was released when he was, I think, 48, 49. And he walked out of jail without a single rupee in compensation for having been jailed for 23 years for a crime he did not commit. What is that human's psyche going to be? It's going to be bitter, and it's going, what you assume it would be. It's going to be bitter. It's going to be, I don't even know how to live anymore. So we told his story over 6 parts, and we asked our community to give him 23 lakhs for the 23 years he spent in jail. And we raised that in 12 hours. And I got on call with him and I broke the news to him and said that we've done this. And, you know, we hope that nothing can change the years, but we hope that there's a better future. And he was so emotional, he was howling. And he said, the world is really kind. And the world isn't such a bad place. And I was zapped, because I was like, I don't think after all that you've been through, that strength, that you can still turn around and say the world isn't that bad. And I believe it. I really do believe it. The second was, and this highlights a lot of social issues that we face as a country. There was a woman who, you probably have read this in the news. She'd given birth to 5 girls and she was pregnant for a 6th time because they wanted a son. And the husband decides to slit her stomach open to check the gender of the baby. And the baby didn't survive. It happened to be a boy. And she survived with 5 girls. And again, we told her story and we raised, I think, 25 lakhs for her, for 5 lakhs for each daughter. And she called our sub-editor Kirti Shri and said that, aap photo bhejo hame, aapka photo. And she's like, kyu? It's like, हमने कभी भगवान नहीं देखा है, हमारे लिए आप ही भगवान हो. एंड वेन यू रियलाइज दैट एज अ कम्युनिटी, एज ह्यूमन बीइंग्स, यू आर एबल टू मेक दैट डिफरेंस, दैट्स द फर्स्ट थिंग. एंड द सेकेंड थिंग, इन वन मिनट ऑफ यू नोइंग दैट दिस हैज हैपेंड, योर लाइफ चेंजेस. Sure, the medium is a Humans of Bombay or a crowdfunding campaign, but there is a larger force that is protecting you and that's looking after you. And it's, I mean, of course, you can argue that the number of cases or the number of people who go through this, it's physically impossible, but it happens. And I think that's the beauty of life, that it surprises you in a way that you can't imagine. And you're able to pull together, whether with community or without, something special.
You know, what also strikes me about both these stories that you've told me is that when you're at your lowest, when also the world has shown you the lowest it can kind of pull you down to and what it can do to you, you also realize there's a almost like a parallel opposite to it. The world can actually show you its kindest points when it's at its cruelest. And this kind of reinstates that, right? This kind of reinstates that in, and you can't only look at the things that go wrong. You can actually, what you can do, what the world is doing. And there's so much to kind of, I mean, I'm still thinking about both of them as you were talking. And how long does it take you and the team to kind of, it obviously will affect all of you, right? At some point of time. A lot of these stories, I mean, to be able to, one is to tell those stories, other is to even like personally and individually reflect on them. How do you as a unit kind of, do you work together on that? How do you build that system?
We do, we do. I remember I was interviewing Seema Ji. She was Nirbhaya's lawyer. And it was like a two, three hour interview. And it is the lowest I have ever felt. Like I could not function because I've heard details that we couldn't even write about on, like, it's, and she's been through it. And, you know, then you start questioning why again, right? Like, what was she doing? Nothing. She did nothing. But then you lean on each other and the story needs to be told. That's the truth. There's no way to bring out this, right? This impact if you can't write it. And it's just what it is. You lean on each other, you take a bit of time, and then you get the job done. Yeah.
Because I feel that's so core to building a company like yours, is that unless you have that internal support system.
Yeah.
Because you are in many ways not just telling stories, like I said, you're also supporting people out there by telling their stories and also trying to crowdfund everything else. Everybody's going to have a day when they feel pulled down and somebody has to kind of pull them back up. And is it tough for you as the person leading things? Because you will, as founders, there's a founder, I think I was reading it yesterday, someone put on saying a founder is glorified as this really cool thing to do, but it's actually the loneliest job you can ask for. Is that something you've battled with type of time?
Yeah, I mean, I have, but there, we do have really great leaders within the company, and now we just recently got our COO on board. So now I feel a lot better about life. It is a lonely job, especially if you don't have a co-founder. Sometimes you don't have all the answers, and you're expected to, and that's the truth. And you wing it. I've winged it like hundreds of times. Yeah. I've winged it.
You know, there's that whole story about how founders are people, entrepreneurs are people who jump off while starting to stitch together a parachute. I was reading the Pixar founder Ed Catmull's biography, and he says that we were in free fall and then thinking about how we would even build a parachute. So it's almost like that oftentimes, because you don't realize where all of that comes from. But kind of switching directions here, you also do showcase all forms of emotions, all forms of stories, right? Because many of these stories just make you smile, just make you like, you know, they give you that feeling of, oh, this is like a lovely story to read. And I've often had that. And also stories which often don't get told, which might seem ordinary in a normal sense, but sometimes when you come across them, they just kind of make you feel like, okay, this you're seeing human beings at their happiest selves in the most interesting ways.
Yeah,
I've noticed a lot of that as well across the board. I keep waiting for those to pop up more often than not, and because I look forward to that smile that comes in and almost naturally.
Yeah.
If you had to pick up a few moments across your journey and say these were pivotal to where you are today, what would those be?
The first crowdfunding campaign we ran, that was 2015, small, 5 lakh campaign, but open up the possibility that community can come together to help. So many things. The first book, the second book, our show, it's called How the Hell Did I Do It? Again, that was winging to another level. Like, it was just like, let's just go for it. And there was no planning, nothing. It just happened because we got a really good interview and we're like, dude, let's just start with this. There's the office space, the team, so many things. It's hard to pick. The interview with Mr. Tata was special. There have been quite a few.
The stories of women that you told, I feel some of them are so impactful because they often don't get told. They get lost in the noise, or they're categorized as, you know, that token stories of women that have popped in there. And I've never felt that when I've consumed it on your platform. So I'd love for you to kind of go into that a little bit.
Like I do. I talk about women and children in the country. I read extensively about these things. I read on the policy level. I read on a budget level on what's being done on women and children. That's the first thing. Second thing, up until recently, we had about 89% women in the organization. Is it a factor? Maybe. The third is, it is just the need of the hour. And outside of these two factors, it's what should be done. So yeah, we do tell stories of strong women, of what women go through, of what it is that society or a certain preconceived notion about what an Indian woman stands for is still prevalent today. Definitely. Like, you'll be surprised that we still listen to stories of dowry, marital rape, domestic abuse, rape, just things that you're like, this is, I can't believe it's happening. And it is. So it needs to be told.
It's not, and it's happening at a level that I feel we often ignore, or rather we have, I wouldn't maybe say ignore, I would say we have blinders on.
Yeah.
We somehow told ourselves we're rolling up that window and saying it's...
Yeah. So we're rolling down the window.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this is the traffic outside.
Yeah. Whenever I've seen the interviews you've done in terms of your show, and also notice that your guests do end up talking about many stories in their lives.
Which they haven't.
And you kind of let them hold into that and go deeper into that. At that point, when you're asking those questions, what is your thought process? Like, what is going on in your head?
Sometimes I'm like, this is, you are crossing a boundary for sure. There is no way. And be prepared that the person is going to say, no, I'm not going to answer this or whatever. It's not happened up until now. Just ask. I just, like... Okay, so if I heard this story across a dinner table or a coffee table and you were my friend, I'd ask, right? I could be like, but why? That's it. So if that question comes in my mind, but why or how, I ask it. And then people have tended to respond. So we interviewed Aamir Khan, and he actually cried. And I was like, oh my God, this is like, that's it. Like, my interview is over. This is just the worst thing that could happen. But he came back and he said, I don't know what it is about you, the questions you ask, like, what's up, you know? And I said, I don't know. And then we just continued the conversation. I think it's just from a place of, it's a conversation and I genuinely have a question about this, so I'm asking. And it's not like, most of the times it's not even planned. It's not in script. It just happens. So, yeah.
Because you can't plan those moments.
You can't. You just can't.
As much as you might believe that this is the probing question, I feel the probing questions actually never get anything. It's always the right moment when someone says something, you just kind of ask what spontaneously comes into your mind and that just lets it flow.
Yeah.
There's also another aspect to this, right? Is that how, at which points, and I'm sure it happens, but I actually want to know if it happens, is that you also tend to kind of wear down with a certain sense of doubt, right?
Hmm.
There is self-doubt that wears through our journeys, especially when you're building things, when you're having conversations, when you're asking questions. What's your relationship like with self-doubt?
It's a good one, but I've worked on it. I've worked on it a lot. Again, it's back to what I was talking about, just that sense of alignment and clarity. I have no doubt that none of this would happen the way it did, or we would be creating what we are, if there wasn't this mindfulness, this consciousness that's just running almost parallelly in the background. Like, I've reached a stage where I don't doubt as much as I would, or very much at all. It's a good relationship.
Because it's a tricky one, right? It's so easy to get sucked back into self-doubt. Yeah. Even if you, like, as strong as you might build yourself towards that, at some point, there is that, sometimes it takes like a tiny thing to kind of let you like roll back down.
Momentarily, but this is what you do, right? If you're doing the work, the internal work, what happens is that your time of mulling, which otherwise would have been days or weeks, is just compacted into such a short time frame that it's not impacting you. So therefore, I'm not even able to think, what was that time? So definitely, yes, there would be moments where I'm like, did I send the right message? Or could I have communicated this better? But it's, the reaction time is too less for me, for it to have even penetrated my subconscious, which is why I'm not able to tell you that it's there.
And that's, I feel, something which most people don't realize, is that you got to keep working on it and working on it till you build a system that's almost like, you know, it's like those guardrails or alarm bells that you're building in. I mean, yeah. Alarm bell is a little extreme, right? Guardrails you're building in to say that, okay, this is, you're going there, hold on.
Yeah, you can't operate on autopilot. It's the stupidest thing you can do. Like, you're a human being. You cannot be on autopilot. Like, if you continue to do exactly what you've continued to do year on year, how are you going to get to anywhere different? Just like, it's a very simple question. How? You have to do something different. And in this case, the one thing that is different is that you're actually these things, like, you're showcasing restraint, you're going inwards, you're being like, okay, I'm not going to overreact and blow this thing out of proportion because it just doesn't deserve my energy. Like, honestly, I'm so tired at the end of the day. I'm like, do I really, really want to expend energy on one unresponded text or like one thing I said wrong? And the answer is always no. Like, I'd rather just be chilling and watching a show, you know.
Speaking of chilling and watching a show.
Yeah.
Beyond work, what do you spend a lot of time doing, which helps you kind of, I don't like the word disconnect, but like connect with other sides of yourself?
Yeah, there's no disconnect. Firstly, like, this is a farce. There is no disconnect. I'm working. And that's the truth. Yeah. There is, must be honest about how
watching
it
a show, you're still working.
Yeah, like, it is happening. Like, what, you think I'm switched off? Like, if an email comes and it has to be responded to at 1 a.m, I'm responding to it. And I know that you're an idiot, but you've accepted that. That yes, I am this idiot. I am obsessed to a certain degree with my work. to a large degree to my work, and it is what it is. But do I chill? Yes.
Like, do you take a pause?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I love, like, I hang out all the time with my friends where work conversations are limited. Because also what tends to happen is people, the first question that they ask you is like, so what's happening with work? What's new? Oh, how is this interview? Oh my God, you know? And you have to maneuver the conversation a little bit, being like, no, it's all good, but like, let's talk about something else. Yeah, watch a lot of shows. I enjoy cooking. I travel a lot. I read. So this is the only time where I'm disconnected. If I'm reading, I'm reading. Like, I just don't want to like be asked about too many things. I also wake up very early in the morning. So I do have time for things that are important to me, like meditating or reading or working out. I do a lot of classes randomly.
What's the last thing you read that you really, like, really enjoyed?
That I really enjoyed? That I could not put down? I read When Breath Becomes Air. It was interesting. I love Chitra Banerjee, so I wait with bated breath for her to release any new book. She's just released a book called Independence. I read Robin Sharma's latest book. Yeah, all these three, four were good.
And throughout this, I'd say across your life, if you had to pick one piece of advice that you've gotten that's always stayed with you, what would that be?
I don't take other people's advice too seriously.
That is a very good piece of advice as well.
Yeah, like, I just don't. Because I'm just like, it is so relevant to your life, but it's so irrelevant to my life. Like, how? Yeah, but I've had mentors. They're like anecdotal. So in that moment, that advice would be really helpful. Yeah. But from a longevity point of view, like, is it a prolific life advice that I think important to give here right now? No.
So how this podcast always goes is, there comes a point where I'm like, I can take another hour of conversation on this one. But we know that we always like to leave something for a possible part two at some point of time, as you always put it.
Yeah.
We always make our audience believe that there will be a part two.
Okay.
And it just depends on, did the guest enjoy it enough?
Hmm.
More than the audience for us. For us, it's about, did the guest enjoy it enough?
Yeah.
And I hope to have you back on this chair.
Yeah.
And do this again.
But absolutely.
And thank you so much for doing this.
No, thank you. It's been great. It's my first. It's weird to be here.
On the other side.
Yeah. So, I was thinking of like 10-15 questions, being like, okay.
We can do that.
No.